An update now to a story we've been following for months, rail cars that were being stored in northern New York. The Adirondack Council had been critical of the company storing tankers on railroad tracks in the Adirondacks. Iowa Pacific has removed the rail cars, and New York State is now petitioning the Federal Surface Transportation Board to declare the line abandoned. The council recently penned a letter supporting the state effort. Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan says it's important that people understand the petition would not result in the removal of the tracks.
I'd like to clear up what I think has become a common misconception on the local level that the state's petition would result in the removal of the railroad tracks. That's not the case. The state's petition is to remove the rail operator, the group that had decided to store old oil trains on the line inside the Adirondack Park. This would not make any definitive decision about the fate of the rails or the corridor itself. It would simply remove the operator and give the state and local folks a chance to talk about what the future of that line ought to be.
So what assurances would there be that any new potential uses of the rail line wouldn't end up with the same sort of problems, storage or transport of objectionable materials?
Well, really, the only way to do that is to have the federal government order them not to do it, or to have the new operator, should there be one, decide that they will sign a contract agreeing not to do that. The last operator said verbally that he would not do that, and then refused to sign a document that would guarantee that that was the case, and went back on his word. So that's a concern that we have for the community and for this section of the park, and we're hoping that whatever the resolution is, and the state has about 90 days to work that out now, that it will result in a rail line that will not be used as an oil tank junkyard anymore.
In the past, Iowa Pacific has dug its heels in, not just in this region, but in other areas of the country.
That's right.
Do you expect any problems from them going through this process at the Surface Transportation Board?
I don't think they are going to be a problem. They appear to have removed their equipment and their property from the rail line itself at this point. They also appear to be negotiating with another potential buyer, which we would have no problem with them finding another rail operator, as long as that new rail operator agrees not to store anything on the line. So what the state has done essentially is to ask the federal government, even though it's filed this petition for abandonment, it wants 90 days to talk to this potential new operator and determine if they will agree not to store oil trains on the line and if they have any intention of using this section of line. As you know, the business model for hauling freight on that line has been a bit troubled. The previous operator said he wanted to haul rock from the old Tahawus mine in Newcomb to New York City and Long Island, and it would be used to make concrete and roadways and that sort of thing. But the price to haul that freight on CP Rail has been prohibitively expensive, and you need to get it from Tahawus and North Creek on to CP Rail's line to get it to New York City. So we're concerned that regardless of who the new operator is, that the viability of that market is not particularly good. Whether Tupper Lake can the new owner from Tupper Lake, Mr. Mitchell, can find somebody who's willing to take it on the rail in the near future or not, I don't want to speculate on that, but frankly, we want the state and the local governments to be ready if this company is not prepared to use this line to find some other way to make it a community asset and something that is compatible with the nature of the park.
I noticed in your letter that you indicate the commercial viability of this line is limited in the future. So are we looking at a potential tourism line? Would that mean more debate over rail to trail in this corridor? What are we looking at?
We want all of the options to be open. I have seen rail bikes using this section of line, and there were literally dozens of people out there having a great time. That seems like one possibility. And I think there are lots of other potential options out there for use of the corridor, whether it's with the rails or without the rails. But we want to make sure that the public has the opportunity to investigate all of the options and do that without the pressure of a commercial owner with a junkyard hanging over their head.
Senator Schumer is pushing against repeal of a regulation requiring freight carriers to equip unit trains carrying explosive crude oil with electronically controlled pneumatic braking systems. Apparently, there may be a repeal of those regulations.
That's crazy. I mean, those systems are set up. I think they were first identified as being needed on passenger trains after the disaster that happened in the lower Hudson Valley with an out-of-control train essentially jumping the tracks because of operator error and occasionally because the operator falls asleep. To do that on an oil train is almost a guarantee that the place it goes off the rails is going to be destroyed, whether that's a population center full of people or a wildlife sanctuary or Lake Champlain. That just doesn't make any sense at all. To try to prevent those trains from having an accident that results in a derailment is job one from public safety perspective. In fact, we think that the federal government should go a step farther. We published a report earlier this year along with the National Wildlife Federation stating that we believe oil train traffic through the Champlain Valley should be banned entirely. We don't see how it can be done safely, and certainly if they start to repeal the safety regulations to save a few pennies here and there for the rail companies or for the oil companies, that just puts everybody at risk.
How likely is it he could stop a repeal with the current administration and Congress?
Well, it's unlikely that he could stop it unless there is a public outcry. So we're happy to see that he's making noise about that. In fact, we had not heard about this until he made this announcement today. So that's it's important to get it on people's radar. Repeal of regulations and repeal of safety standards is something that every person that is within the sound of my voice ought to be worried about.
John Sheehan, the Trump administration also plans quite a few regulatory changes. Some people say rollbacks, depending on which side of the aisle you're on. The Clean Power Plan would be replaced with the Affordable Clean Energy Rule, which in your email to me, you say stinks. Literally, figuratively, or both?
Both. The Affordable Clean Energy Rule is a terrible replacement for the Clean Power Plan. The Clean Power Plan was the federal government's answer to the fact that electric power plants cause the most carbon and greenhouse gas emissions in the country right now, and they are the largest unregulated industry in terms of carbon. The rule would have, the Clean Power Plan would have reduced carbon pollution by 32% between now and 2030. That is a big chunk that is getting in the right direction. It may not have been enough to fix the problem entirely, but other sectors of the economy were being worked on at the same time. We get closer to the goal that we know that we have to reach in order to prevent the calamity that would occur if we allow runaway climate change to dominate the next 30 years of our lives, or maybe the next 300 years of our lives once the cycle gets out of the control of human beings. So my concern is that the repeal of that plan will have grave implications for the Adirondacks in terms of climate change, but also in terms of acid rain. The Clean Power Plan, because it required companies to switch fuels and find more renewable ways to make electricity, also would have reduced acid rain and smog in the Adirondacks fairly substantially. The new plan won't do that. In fact, it barely would cause any carbon reductions. And that's not just a shame, but it's a disaster for the environment and for the life support of this planet.
I believe the public comment period is still ongoing for the new plan. If they move forward with it, what could the impact be on the council's lawsuit against the EPA regarding acid rain?
That won't have a direct impact on our lawsuit, but we do have a suit right now regarding smog and acid rain, in which we are working with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation and with the state of Maryland to try to get the federal government to agree to turn on pollution controls during the summertime when nitrogen pollution, which also causes acid rain, is most likely to result in the creation of ground-level ozone, also known as smog. That is a terrible thing for human health. It sends a lot of people to the doctor and to the hospital every year. It keeps them from getting to work, keeps them from going to school. It costs society a lot of money to let air pollution go on unabated. At the same time, it does a great deal of environmental damage. We see that nitrogen pollution is one of the number one causes of acid rain in the park. It also results in smog here at the highest points of the park, where we have elevated ozone levels, where people are exerting themselves and where the oxygen is a little thin. We often have a fairly thick layer of ozone passing over our heads at cloud level, where it's coming directly from the Midwest and causing damage both to human beings and to the vegetation at the mountaintop. So that is a concern for us. It's really a concern for anything with lungs. So an endangered species like the spruce grouse, which may be experiencing smog on top of the threats to its habitat, or a species of special concern in New York like the Bicknell's thrush that lives at the mountaintop, where the air quality is rather poor and where acid rain is drenching the soil, we're not leaving them with much of a chance to survive long term.
That part comes out of the acid rain lawsuit. The Environmental Law and Energy Center at Harvard is tracking the environmental rules changes that the administration is planning. And among them are the Endangered Species Act.
Yes.
And
as well as opening the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge for oil exploration, which was something they did pretty quietly, but happened.
And the mercury and air toxics standards.
That's right.
All things that flow into concerns in the Adirondacks.
In each and every case, what the administration is doing is attempting to rewrite the way the federal government approaches protecting human health. In the case of the mercury program, and I'll try and explain what they're doing. They're saying that the mercury rule is too expensive and that it is onerous on industry. The reason being that they say that you can't justify the cost given the amount of human health benefit from reducing mercury alone. That seems inconceivable to me. However, there is an additional benefit when you reduce mercury of reducing sulfur and nitrogen at the same time. In order to get the mercury to come down, you've got to find that something other than coal to set fire to in your power plant. So if you switch to natural gas or a lower sulfur oil, you are making a huge improvement in the amount of sulfur and nitrogen exiting your plant at the same time that you're cutting back on mercury. Those co-benefits are considered by EPA as part of the benefit of the rule. And using those, you see that there is about a 20-to-1 benefit for every dollar spent controlling mercury. If you take away the sulfur and nitrogen benefit, it drops down to about a 5-to-1. And they're saying that that's not enough to make industry spend the money. I don't agree with that math. I don't agree with that theory, and I think that the federal government's attempt to do this is likely to backfire on them, but frankly, the public has to understand what's at stake first. So we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this in the near future, I hope, and that I also hope that the upcoming elections may have some impact on what public policy is going forward.
For the past year or so, the Adirondack Council and others have been raising red flags about overuse in the Adirondacks for certain areas that are most popular. The DEC has put in some new rules, changing parking, using shuttle buses to try to ease the overcrowding in certain areas. Has there been any visible impact yet that hikers are moving to new areas and that there's any easing of the overcrowding?
We saw a lot of crowds on Columbus Day weekend and a lot of crowds the following weekends that we had good weather. So I don't think we've seen the impact yet, but we're confident that public education and a new approach by the state can work together to make that happen in the next couple of years. We're encouraged by the Frontier Town investment that the state has made. We would hope that that'll become a hub for traffic coming up the Northway from the south, to direct people into places like North Hudson and Newcomb and Minerva, where they have not been directed before, essentially because it was too easy just to jump into Keene Valley, get out of your car someplace that you could park and start climbing in the mountains. But Keene Valley is getting awfully crowded during the summertime, and so is all of the Route 73 corridor. I think we saw that parking lots were overflowing both last year and this year. And in many ways, this is a good problem to have, Pat. I mean, it shows that people really love the Adirondacks and they want to come here. But we have to find a way to keep our love of the place from loving it to death. And the work that we're trying to do right now with the Keep It Wild campaign, I think, is to remind people that they have other options, that there are wonderful places outside the High Peaks Wilderness or even in different parts of the High Peaks Wilderness that go unexplored every year by the vast majority of the people who come to the region. Don't let habit be the force that drives you to the same place over and over again. There are lots of places that you can go that there are wonderful climbs. There are easier climbs with rewarding views and beautiful waterfalls and lakes that you can explore. It's a great big park out there. We've got 11,000 water bodies that I don't think anybody's seen all of them quite yet. There's a big, big park to explore and one that we hope people will take advantage of that in the future.
An extended conversation with Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan is at WAMC.org. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.